But his ambition waned with time, then wilted and dried up, like a dead yellow leaf in a windless fall. He'd become content with the writing he did at work, hunched from morning till afternoon over a dilapidated desk with faded paint. The director's voice snapped him out of his distracted state. "Don't you see we're in agreement?" S nodded, saying nothing in reply. "You'll work with us," the director said in a firm, confident voice. "We're in need of people like you." "Work with you?" "Yes." "In the circus?" "Yes, yes." S smiled a little. "Who knows? Perhaps my luck has finally turned around," he said to himself. He felt like the decisive moment had arrived, so he looked seriously into the director's face and asked him, "Which kind of work would you like me to do?"
An excerpt from George Salenz's At the Circus, from translator Sam Bollier. New Ways of Being. The winter 2025 issue, published concurrently with the Asymptote Journal's 14th anniversary, centers on such transformation. New forms. From Elsa Grabinski's absurdist diary entries to Damien Serrell's translations of Paul Klee, along with new work from 32 countries, readers may discover exclusive interviews with Augustin Fernandez Malo and Tan Pin Pin, poetry by Osip Mandelstam and Natsumi Soseki, and fiction by Lydia Dymkovska and George Salem, all reimagining new ways of being. The latter author, Salem, and a new translation of his tale, At the Circus, are the subject of this episode of the Asymptote Podcast. To date, there have been few English-language translations of Syrian author George Salem's work. Salem lived from 1933 to 1976. A Syrian writer from Aleppo, Salem authored 5 collections of stories, a novel, and criticism. He was a translator of literary work into Arabic and served as the head of the Arab Writers Union in the Aleppo branch. His sole novel, Fil Manfa, In Exile, remains untranslated. Ever present in his short stories is the protagonist known only as S. There is more than meets the eye in Salem's deceptively simple and often surreal tale. Samuel Sam Bollier translates prose from Arabic. A former journalist and editor, he has a degree in history from Brown University and has previously translated the memoir of Yemeni writer Zayed Mutai Damash. In his translator's notes, Sam Bollier observes that beneath the understated style lie religious allegories, philosophical quandaries, and dry humor. I am pleased to have Mr. Bollier in the virtual studio today for a conversation on this rare translation of Salem's work. Thank you for joining us today on the Asymptote Podcast, Samuel.
Thank you so much for having me.
Before we begin to unpack some observations on the story At the Circus, I'd like to discuss the translation process. This is a podcast on the art of translation. You mention in your translator's notes that Salem's stories make the translator's work relatively straightforward, but also rendering the character's conversation in English is not without its challenges, given, I think, the style of conversations presented in the story and the formal characteristics of modern Arabic. Can you elaborate a bit on this?
Sure. Yeah, so for context, Arabic is an interesting language in that it's not really a single language at all. There is a formal standard dialect of the language called Modern Standard Arabic, or Fusha, which is used in news broadcasts and books and law, for instance. People understand it, but they don't often speak it in their daily lives. One analogy that is sometimes made is that the difference between spoken Arabic and modern standard Arabic is like the difference between modern day English and Shakespearean English, which linguistically, I'm not sure how valid that analogy is, but it sort of gives you a sense of that gap. And so there are also these many local dialects of Arabic that people speak on a day-to-day basis. And some of these dialects are pretty close to Fusha, while others are very different, especially in some more peripheral parts of the Arab world. So literature is nearly always written in this in modern standard Arabic. Some authors might write dialogue partly in local dialect, or they might use some terms or phrases that are specific to that dialect. By contrast, George Salem virtually never does this. Everything is in this sort of high Fusha with no exceptions. There's not really any dialect or slang or foreign loanwords. From my perspective, this made it somewhat easier to translate, as I mainly studied modern standard Arabic, and that's what I'm most comfortable with, although I do have some proficiency in the Levantine dialect, which is spoken in Syria, among other places. One challenge here is figuring out how to render conversations in translation, though, because it would sound a little funny if the dialogue between this sort of average Joe protagonist in this story and the circus director were to sound overly formal. And just as an interesting aside, English language films are typically subtitled in this overly formal register of Arabic, even if you're watching something that's not all that elevated, like, you know, some action movie. The challenge here was to figure out how to make the conversation sound natural and normal and not too formal. So I guess I'm not sure I have concrete examples on specific words or phrases and how I translated those, but my process was to jot down a first draft, just trying to capture the basic meaning. And then I did a second pass and sort of colloquialized the language and making it sound a bit more casual and everyday in English. This story is written in a pretty matter-of-fact style, and it made it, as I mentioned in the translator's note, relatively straightforward. That also applies to most of the other stories that were published as part of this collection. In his later works, though, especially his final two collections of short stories, these are a lot more challenging. There's the narrative is more fragmented. There are much stronger spiritual themes and sort of abstract concepts, and it becomes a lot harder to hew closely to the original story while also making the text sound good in English, which I suppose is always the trade-off in translation between, you know, fidelity to the text and flow in the target language.
So in the story, the man is simply known as S. And he might be an administrator by occupation. He goes to the circus, and we know that he generally avoids such events, possibly any form of entertainment, including the cinema. Yet about him, there is this constant raving about the circus, that he should finally relent out of, I think it's embarrassment with his peers. It all seems to forecast that the unusual will occur, perhaps even something life-changing. He is, I quote, on his way to fight a decisive battle. After the performance, he waits for the crowd to thin out, and without spoiling any of the surprise of the narrative, this story turns its focus to the circus director. Tell me a little about your feelings about this unusual circus director who comes forward with a very direct approach, seems certain that S should be part of the performance team of the circus.
Yeah, so the anonymous protagonist of the story, S, which is equivalent to, I guess, Mr. X in English, for instance, he's this rather gray bureaucrat who leads an understimulating life. And by contrast, this circus director is a real character. It seems like he might have some megalomaniacal tendencies, possibly a bit psychotic. And he has this hustler's gift of homing in on a person's weak points, which in S's case, I think, is his lack of self-confidence and lack of direction. He's looking to make a big change in his life, but he's not really sure what that is. And the circus director is able to provide that impetus for S to make a very big change. In the dialogue between him and S, the circus director talks about how he has a sort of grandiose vision of what the circus can do for mankind and frames it in almost these religious terms that the circus will be the salvation of humanity. Does he believe what he's saying? It's not really clear. I think he's this a character who maybe he's not consciously lying, but he's, I think, indifferent to the truth values of what he says. He instantly managed to lock eyes with S after the circus and identify him as a potential mark who might be of use to him. Conversely, though, not to paint an overly pessimistic picture here, I think S, in some sense, could use the change of pace, and perhaps the circus director doesn't have what's best in mind for him, but it's possible that any change at this point in S's life could be better than the status quo.
So there's an ebb and flow of the deliberate literal dialogue and internal commentary from S. And I'd like to take a moment to have you read from the text for our listeners to be immersed in the way that emotions are conveyed and the peculiarities of the matter-of-fact nature of the director's pitch.
Yes. He tried to interrupt and tell the director he was wrong in all his assumptions, and that he was just waiting to avoid being pushed by the crowd. But the director didn't give him room to speak, and went on, "No, you know I'm not mistaken. I know people and animals very well. Now, what's your opinion?" S didn't register anything he heard, and asked the director to clarify. "My opinion about what?" "The job, for God's sake." "But I have a job." "I know you do, but what is its value, and where's your ambition?" S thought a bit about his irritating job, his colleagues' harassment, his misery and lack of advancement, and his straitened circumstances. The mention of the word ambition stirred vague emotions in him. Where had his ambition gone? He recalled that on the day he started his position, years ago, he wanted to become an important person, a high-ranking official in the department. He wanted to continue his studies and become powerful in his department. He would spread his clout and influence to the other departments, and then his ambit would expand to include the entire town. But his ambition waned with time, then wilted and dried up, like a dead yellow leaf in a windless fall. He'd become content with the writing he did at work, hunched from morning till afternoon over a dilapidated desk with faded paint. The director's voice snapped him out of his distracted state. "Don't you see we're in agreement?" S nodded, saying nothing in reply. "You'll work with us," the director said in a firm, confident voice. "We're in need of people like you." "Work with you?" "Yes." "In the circus?" "Yes, yes." S smiled a little. "Who knows? Perhaps my luck has finally turned around," he said to himself. He thought he'd be able to do many tasks for the circus, like drafting letters, typing them up, doing accounting work, and selling tickets. He was pleased that he possessed all these skills. "You have many skills," the director told him. S's mouth formed a wide smile that came from the depths of his heart. This may have been the first time in his life that he'd heard such an evaluation of his abilities. He felt like the decisive moment had arrived, so he looked seriously into the director's face and asked him, "Which kind of work would you like me to do?"
And that is the pointed response, because this work will have nothing to do with his skills. Thank you so much for that reading. For me, this language is confident. I never felt aware that the text was derived from another language. And this, I think, is the gift of translation, that the text meets another audience, matching a different culture's sensibilities. Did this section, with its internal dialogue, which had a bit of a more poetic feel than the interrogation from the circus director, did this present any special challenges to you as a translator?
It's interesting. I think this story is written in such a almost dry, matter-of-fact style that, aside from the issues with dialogue translation that I mentioned earlier, it didn't present all that much of a challenge. So this story is interesting in that, compared with the other stories in this collection, which was published in, I believe, 1970, give or take a few years, almost all of the other stories in this collection deal with what you could call ultimate issues. So issues of life and death and the nature of being. And a lot of those were really quite hard to translate. I haven't translated all of them, but I've translated a few. Many more abstract concepts. And for whatever reason, this story amidst this collection really stands out in that it doesn't deal with the ultimate issues. It deals with the more mundane sphere of work and careers and ambition. And perhaps for that reason, the language itself is not as abstract, and it's a bit simpler to render it into English.
Thank you. So Solem lived from 1933 to 1976, and in this brief life, he was very productive in original work and translations to Arabic. His home country, though, went through significant political and social changes, many of which started long before the 20th century. Syria's people have been deeply alienated. There have been interventions by the French and Israeli governments. There are very recent contemporary conflicts and interventions. And I'm interested, if he lived and worked in Syria during all of his writing years, can you comment on whether the impact of these events, war, isolation, the statelessness of people, may have played into the themes and human concerns we can find in this and other of his stories?
So George Solem did live and work in Syria for, I believe, most if not all of his life. He was from Aleppo, a city in northern Syria. As you mentioned, Syria went through a lot of turbulence during this period, from independence from the French mandate to the Ba'athist coup in 1963 that would eventually bring Hafez al-Assad to power, and much later, after Solem's death, his son Bashar al-Assad. I'd say, however, that George Solem's main interest was the inner lives of humans and these ultimate issues I mentioned earlier. According to the introduction to the collected works of George Solem, which was written by Antoine Makdisi, who knew him, Solem was not engagé, but he followed and was aware of political developments in his country. I will say that Solem's first set of short stories is written in a very different style from his later works. And in this first set of short stories, many of them grapple with issues of poverty and social justice, and they're written in this social realism style. But after that, all of his subsequent four collections of short stories are written in this completely different style that is a lot closer to existentialism than it is to social realism. I'm sort of tempted to make a comparison to other artists' creative trajectories, like Dostoevsky or Bob Dylan, who their initial works are focused on these issues of social justice and inequality and poverty, and they later develop their more distinctive personal style and grew into that. And perhaps the same is true of George Solem. One other point from this introduction to his collected works, Makdisi wrote that Solem did receive some criticism from the left, who accused him of having bourgeois leanings because of the themes he focused on in his fiction, which I found interesting.
Near the end of the story, and we spoke about this a little bit, the director reveals that he has these grandiose plans, generating a circus team that will emerge as a town in and of itself, and he shall rescue humanity and restore justice in human communities. There's ambiguity here. I'm on the fence personally about his sincerity as to whether this is a true pursuit or a final conceit to recruit S. Perhaps this is unimportant if this excitement has been even temporarily restored to S's life. Would you share some thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think I wrote in the translator's note that this story has an upbeat ending, and I think it does, but at the same time, I have a sense that S might be in for a big disappointment. S is looking for a big change in his life. He works at a desk all day, and he doesn't really have any chances to advance professionally, and he's very bored. That said, the circus director comments at one point, perhaps letting down his guard, saying, all jobs are pretty much the same. And I'm not sure S will find anything fundamentally different in this one. You know, he may have made a big decision to quit his job and join the circus, but ultimately, I think his big flaw is that he has always been led around by others and has a hard time standing up for himself. If he had proactively reached out to the circus director and asked to join the circus, then perhaps it would be a different story. But ultimately, I'm not sure that all that much has changed inside of him. That said, who knows? Perhaps once he leaves and joins the circus, he will undergo a personality change and start to live his life on a different trajectory. I guess that's the hopeful reading, but I'm not sure.
I'll also mention for our readers, the occupation that has been chosen for him by the director is quite peculiar. I would say fully absurd, and is one of the great and weird enchantments of this story. So I hope our listeners will take the time to read this story, which is short, but very fulsome. Do you conjecture that we'll see more English translations of Salem's work?
I hope so. I'm trying to translate a few of his other stories, and at some point, I think his novella, In Exile, is a fantastic story, and I would love to translate that at some future point.
In regard to one of the themes I think is circulating in the story, S must not only make a psychological transformation to even convince himself that he is capable for the job, which he initially vigorously protests as being unsuitable for him or really anyone else, but he must make a physical transformation as well. As you're familiar with Salem's other work, might you speak to this theme and whether it occurs in other stories or his novel?
I'd say transformations play a big part in George Salem's stories. Oftentimes these are psychic transformations the characters go through, but sometimes they're accompanied by or alluded to by actual physical transformations. So in one of his stories, we have a man who loves clouds and who in the end of the story actually becomes a cloud. In another story in which this S is also the protagonist, he wanders into the desert and is told by a disembodied voice to lie down until he becomes grains of sand. And in yet another story, a man finds himself compressed and transformed into a sheet of paper. You can tell he read Kafka's Metamorphosis. I think these transformations have several different meanings. In the story where the man is told to lie down in the desert until he becomes grains of sand, the story, I think, is about union with God and the universe. And in this story, the transformation is more mundane. I think the transformation, which, again, I won't spoil to the listener, but I think it's perhaps a commentary on the absurdity of professional life in which we might pretend to be someone that we're actually not.
That's great. I hope someday we will be exposed to enough of his work translated to the English language, at least for the Anglosphere. I hope that we will one day be able to refer to this as Salem-esque, in the same way that we refer to something as Kafka-esque. I'd like to thank you, Sam, for joining us here today, sharing your thoughts on the translation and the themes within this work.
Thanks, that was fun.
The winter 2025 issue, published concurrently with the Asymptote Journal's 14th anniversary, is available freely at www.asymptotejournal.com. The Asymptote Podcast is produced by myself, Vincent Hostack. Our archive of episodes may be found at asymptotejournal.com/blog/podcast. There are many ways to support the premier journal of world literature and translation, as a sustaining or masthead member, and the Asymptote Book Club. It's the only book club dedicated to world literature and translation that partners with top independent publishers on both sides of the Atlantic. Find out more at asymptotejournal.com. Until next time, engage with art from around the world. Listen and read well.